Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting and informative edition of Atlanta Business Radio. I'm your host today, Ryan Redhawk. Thank you so much for joining us. And sitting in the producer chair, running the board and keeping us all straight is my co-host and producer, Alex Gossett-Shiflett. How are you, Alex?
I'm doing pretty great. How about yourself?
Fantastic. We got a special guest here in the studio today. Our Atlanta listeners are going to know him very well, and we are going to get into his background and how he is changing the world here in Atlanta. But first, let me tell you, today's episode is brought to you in part by ATDC, helping entrepreneurs launch and build technology companies in Georgia. For more information, go to atdc.org. That's atdc.org. Also, make sure you're connected with us on social media, Twitter, at Business Radio X, and you can follow the show as well, Atlanta Biz Radio, Atlanta B-I-Z Radio. And don't forget about Facebook. Check us out there, leave your thoughts and comments, and you'll be able to see photos of our in-studio guests. And now it's my distinct pleasure to welcome to the Business Radio X flagship studio a man without further ado. His name is Ricky Steele. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fantastic, Ryan. Thank you very much for having me here.
My pleasure. You are not unfamiliar with the network, Business Radio X. If you've hosted a show here, Booth 61, for many years, and you've also been a guest recently to talk about Steele Jobs, which is your latest adventure into business. So let's talk about that right out of the gate here. Your seventh entrepreneur journey, is that right?
Well, we try to figure it out. It's either seventh or eighth, but I think the eighth one was so pitiful that we've tried to take that off the list. So this is what I call my seventh real startup.
And what does Steele Jobs do for, or Steele Technology Partners do for folks?
Steele Technology Partners, which the website is steelejobs.com, is going to be one of the premier IT staffing firms in Atlanta. We are every bit of 2 weeks old. We're so excited about the future. At Steele Technology Jobs, we are passionate about our clients, our candidates, our community, and each other. And I think that'll be the great differentiator in the community as we go forward. But in the first 2 weeks, it's been pretty amazing. We've had some really nice publicity with my friend Urvash Kakaria at the Atlanta Business Chronicle writing a nice little piece, again being mentioned here, and having the opportunity last week to actually be in this same studio and doing a broadcast for TechBridge and getting ready for the digital ball, and got a chance to tell a little bit about the company at that point. But we're a basic IT staffing firm, and a lot of people have asked me, why would you get into this business in this crowded field? And I said, well, very simply, I did some research and found that there was 299 IT staffing firms in Atlanta, and a firm 300 would be an even number. And so I felt like that would be a lot of fun.
And soon to be number one, I'm sure, with all the good work that you're doing there. So we'll talk more about that as the show progresses here. But let's walk our listeners back. Let's take the years back a little bit. Let's take us back to the beginning. Young Ricky Steele, born in Columbus, or in Atlanta, Georgia, but soon moved to Columbus, Georgia, where your upbringing was. Take us back to that time.
Well, I was born. It was about the time that Sherman was going through with that urban renewal project he did back in the 60s. Actually, I was born in 1952 in Crawford Long Hospital. My mom and I settled in. My dad, who played football 4 years as a letterman at the University of Georgia, finished his ROTC and went to Fort Benning for his OCS. Somewhere in the first year, he re-injured a knee that had been operated on twice, and he stayed in Columbus the rest of his life to 2002. Mom and I joined him, probably mid-1953. I lived in Columbus until 1978 when I moved to Atlanta with a startup business that in Columbus was not so successful, but we did a lot better in Atlanta. But I've spent most of my life in and out of Atlanta with both grandparents, one living across from Lenox Square and the other living by Toco Hills, kind of in Decatur area. Every summer was spent in Atlanta doing something, and of course, old holidays and that sort of thing. But you know, I got a lot of great friends in Columbus, already doing business with a prominent company in Columbus that has a duck that people may have heard
of. Something like quack, quack, or something. Quack. That's good. And Columbus is a great Georgia town. It's a small enough town, it's a military town. People are connected, and it's gone under a revitalization over the last couple of years as well. The downtown is booming and such, but you went to school there, grew up there, and that's where you learned to be a young man.
Actually went from Clubview Elementary School to Richards Junior High School to Hardaway High School and Columbus College, now Columbus State University,
yes,
all four blocks from the front door of my home. I was not a big traveler. I liked it there. I liked growing up in Columbus. So many great role models like Bill Turner and Jim Blanchard and others who mm-hmm. are icons across this state and country. So I had a chance to have a lot of influence or be influenced by some great men and women down in Columbus. And I still get there as often as possible.
And then you made the final move, or a big move, back to your home of Atlanta in 1979. Is that right?
Yes. I had this brilliant idea in Columbus that I was working for a friend in the lawn and garden care industry. And every city I would go into to look up lawn and garden care companies in the Yellow Pages. For you youngsters, that was a big book that had information yeah. in it that's now called Google.
Uh-huh.
But actually,
used to be a yellow book.
Yeah, big yellow right. book called yeah. the Yellow Pages.
Correct.
And, I'm familiar.
Some folks are. But anyway, I would look up Lawn and Garden Care Center, and one of the next listings would be limousine service.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought there's 20 in Atlanta and 10 in Jacksonville and all around the Southeast. And in Columbus, Georgia, where I was living and grew up, there was not a single limousine service. So as bright as I was at that time, I decided it's time to do one in Columbus. And here to report today, I don't know how many people know anything about Columbus, but it will not be the next great limousine capital of the world. We had four cars, and we had two cars to begin with, and they were twice as many as we ever needed. Mm. We eventually got a few more cars and moved to Atlanta, basically to go bankrupt. You know, in Columbus, it's a big little city. Everybody knows everybody, mm-hmm. and I did not want to go bankrupt where I grew up. And so I moved to Atlanta, where all I knew was my grandparents. And I figured they were going to feed me either way.
Mm-hmm.
So we came up here. And
but you were going to make it or break it here in Atlanta.
I was in the back of my heart. I wanted to make it and be a success. And I think the way we built the business in Columbus and when it got to Atlanta, it kind of resonated. I have always been a person that believed that golden rule living and servant leadership that I learned from Bill Turner and Jim Blanchard as a youngster was important. And there wasn't a lot of that in Atlanta in that industry at that time. Mm. There were a lot of people in fancy limousines and what do you call them, leisure suits. And
right.
I think they were sometimes front for other businesses, not exactly limousine service. And so we kind of took off fairly rapidly and ended up growing the largest, what we end up calling a destination management company by the mid-80s. We had limousines, vans, buses, provided the buses for the Atlanta Braves and all the National League baseball oh, wow. teams. Every concert that came to the city, we were probably involved. When Coca-Cola celebrated its 100th anniversary in 1986, we did the limousines and a lot of the back-end support. We did tours. We had a magazine publishing division publishing the official travel guide for the state of Georgia called Georgia On My Mind
mm-hmm.
and Georgia for Canadians and News. And so we just had a business that was kind of exciting. We had about 100 vehicles, 150 employees, 7 divisions,
yeah.
and probably the greatest business situation that I've been in. Not the most profitable, but as far as size and community involvement, because mm-hmm. we were involved in pretty much everything that happened in the city.
In 1986, Steele was named Georgia Small Business Person of the Year by the SBA and represented Georgia in Washington, D.C., along with 49 other state winners. That must have been some achievement that you knew, hey, man, this is working out pretty good.
Well, a lot of the people that I competed against were really upset about it because at my size, they didn't believe I could be a small business person. I was kind of, my girth exceeded that limit, but nonetheless, it was a great honor and
yeah.
really not an honor that I won, but an honor that the 150 folks that we were involved in at Sunbelt, the transportation group, mm-hmm. all helped make happen. And I was very proud when I got to Washington. I ended up being number 4 or number 5 in the country.
Wow.
And the only reason I know that is because the last night they named the top 3. And I admit everyone else, so I figured 4 or 5 is the worst I could have possibly been.
Yeah, so. Right. And so that must have been a great honor, and you made it to Atlanta, you're a successful business, but at some point you decided, okay, you kind of run its course there with the transportation company.
Well, it was 88 or 89, and I had a partner. He's since passed, God rest his soul, a great guy named Steve Weinstein. Steve and I came to a point where we wanted to go different directions, mm-hmm. and so he bought me out, and he kept the business, and I think 4 years later, he sold it to a Ross Perot division and made a lot of money, a lot more money than he paid me. But mm-hmm. nonetheless, it was time for me to get out.
How did you know? What was that kind of writing on the wall for you that it was time to move on to different adventures?
Being ADD afflicted and ADHD. It seems like about every 2 years I change jobs, and I'd already been there 7 or 8. So it was ready to try something a little bit different. Mm-hmm. And I did. That was the beginning of my consulting career. And I began consulting other organizations. Ironically, a couple of 6 months later, I got back with Steve and ended up buying one of the divisions back from him, the magazine publishing. And I had a company called Georgia Travel Publications. And I did that for about 4 years. And so again, I don't think you'd call that the third startup, but it was kind of a offshoot of what we had already been doing.
Yes. And along the way, you began to develop yourself too as a master networker, someone who is always out and about talking to people, meeting new folks, and not only just meeting them, but connecting with them, finding out ways you can do business together, help someone professionally or personally as well. Where does all that part of your persona come to play?
Well, that I have to thank my dad. I'm Richard E. Steele Jr., and I'm not half the man that Richard E. Steele Sr. was. Mm. For that matter, I'm not half the man that Richard E. Steele III is either, but
that's so you're somewhere between, right?
That's another story for another day.
Yes.
But anyway, my dad got out of the military in 53 from an injury and started selling insurance door to door in Columbus, Georgia. I believe I remember he made $50 a month, and he had a wife and a child to try to support. Dad wasn't afraid to shake hands with anybody, whether it be the mayor or service station attendant when there actually was folks that pumped your gas for you, to a restaurateur or a sanitation worker. Dad just liked everybody. And so I got to learn firsthand from a person that was really networking before anybody had ever heard that term. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed to be a good way to live life and a good way to do business. And so Dad had a lot of great successes. He probably started 10 or 12 different companies in his life after the insurance business took off and he, you know, had some money and could and succeeded. And, you know, over the years watching him, it just became kind of an inspiration to want to meet as many people as possible. Mm-hmm. And with the goal, not what you could get out of them or what they could do business with you, but just have a relationship. And at some point, maybe you can do them a favor, help them with something. And more often than not, you know, something always comes back, you know, as a result.
Yeah. Any good pro tips you could give someone out there who's having a little trouble with networking? What are some do's and don'ts that they must adopt in this day and age with networking?
Well, first, there are a lot of introverted folks, especially in the technology industry. And the first thing you got to understand is in this country, no one is ever arrested for shaking someone's hand or looking someone in the eye. So take a chance, take a risk, and stick your hand out from time to time. Number two is networking is never about you. It is always about the person you're looking into the eyes of. And if you can figure out a way to help that person succeed, more often than not, that person's going to figure out some way to help you. See, if you ever give a gift expecting something in return, that's not called a gift. That's called a bribe or a down payment on some future issue. To me, you do something without ever expecting anything in return. If you don't get anything, you're not disappointed. And if you get something, it's Christmas.
Right. Alex?
Yeah, I want to talk about networking and how it's changed over the years, because you talk about this in your book. You talk about going online kicking and screaming. And you and I are exactly the same that way, because we both got into computers in the 90s. It totally changed the way that you network. Share a little bit about that with us.
I think it was 1992, and the publisher of the editor of our magazine company, Marty Barnes, who's now retired in Savannah, wonderful, wonderful woman. Marty said, I need a computer. And I thought the IBM Selectric typewriter was as good as anything known to man.
Yeah.
And anyway, we bought an Apple computer or Macintosh, whatever it was available, you know, back in those days. And Marty was using it to produce the magazines. And one day she said, would you like me to teach you how to use this? I said, Marty, I am 40 years old. I have never used a computer. Why in the Lord's world would I want to do that? It's funny looking back, because now I can't hardly go to the restroom without taking in some sort of electronic device to check on emails or send a text or whatever the case might be. Networking today is so much different than when I did it in the 70s and 80s and 90s. Social media has changed the whole networking process. I don't believe that social networking will replace the one-on-one handshakes, because we're human beings. We've got the interest in looking someone in the eye, patting them on the back, giving them a kiss on the cheek. you know, people relate to people, and that's what networking is all about. But social network, be it LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and many of the other social media engines I'm not even familiar with, give you a chance to touch literally hundreds, if not thousands or millions of people at the stroke of a key. So I don't believe it's going to replace it, but I believe it enhances it and it allows you to do a lot more than you did in the past. So my kids and my wife from time to time scold me for spending too much time on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn, but that's my connection vehicle now. And I don't pick up the phone and call 10 people a day, but I've already probably, it's 10 o'clock in the morning, and I've probably already had communication with three Fortune 500 companies this morning by email, text a couple of folks, and it's just, you know, if I'd have had these tools in 1973 or 74 when I started my career, I wouldn't be on the radio this morning. I'd be down at the beach retired. It's a game changer, social media.
It is. And listeners can find out more information about networking and Ricky's background. He has a book called The Heart of Networking. It's in a revised edition with tools for social media networking. So if you want to get that, it's on Amazon. You can go there to the website and get that book, and certainly recommend that for those of you who may be having some troubles with networking or who don't know Ricky personally and want to find out more information about it. It's a great way to connect with them as well. And he's all over social media, like you said, so Facebook or Twitter, you can find him there, and he'll be gladly accept your friend request and start communicating with you as well. So and so networking is also a big part of the business community here in Atlanta. Today, there's networking events by the hundreds every night of the week. How does one pick particular one to go to, or what recommendations would you have for them on how to narrow it down? What's the best fit for them?
I would say conservatively, with meetup groups and industry events, there are 25 events every single night of the week that I could go to. So really, you've got to be fairly selective. And many nights I have been to as many as three or four, just 15 minutes here, half hour there, whatever the case might be. But for somebody getting into this in the beginning, you know, take a look at the groups, and now with social media and with Google, you can find out what these groups are all about, who attends it, what is their mission, and then try one or two of them. I've been to a lot of events twice and never gone back again. I've gone to some events one time, and I have not missed one since then. So you've got to do some experimentation. Networking, the root word is work. And if you're not going to work, you're not going to be successful. You know?
Right.
I always get amazed when I talk to someone that says, you know, I'm not afraid of hard work. Mm-hmm. I realize I'm speaking to someone who's never done any. Hard work is just that. And if you're not willing to do it, you're not going to be successful as a networker. But with Google and Hoovers and all the search engines, you can find where the groups are. I have found that more often than not, the better groups are the more expensive groups to attend. A lot of people say, I don't want to spend any of my own money or my company's money going out. But I found that a lot of times some groups, a lot of people come that are there for the wrong reasons, or maybe just to hawk a product or whatever the case might be. Sometimes when you pay a fee, whether it's $10 or I've been to some events where it's $1,000 to attend, that separates the contenders with the pretenders. And many times those groups are the Atlanta CEO Council that Sig Mosley and many people are behind, Harriet Hollis and others. That's one of the better organizations. And it costs somebody like me $10,000 a year to be a member of that and to go to it on Monday night once a quarter at the Ritz-Carlton, one of the best events in town.
Mm-hmm. And Ricky has certainly immersed himself in the community and the culture here. He presently serves on the Board of Counselors at the Carter Center, Board of Advisors for Atlanta's Table, a project of the Atlanta Community Food Bank, and Board of Advisors at Kennesaw State University Entrepreneurship Center. So that must be rewarding in itself that you're helping out so many others and advising them in that capacity.
Well, Muhammad Ali said that service is the rent we pay for our space on earth. We all got rent payments due. Mm. Again, watching my dad be involved in the exchange club, and my mom is an exchangeette. Now that's illegal. Women are, and thankfully so, women are as much a part of the civic organizations as men are. But, you know, back in those days, my dad was an exchange club member and Rotary member, and my mom was an exchangeette. And watching that culture over my life, I've tried to be involved as often as possible in giving back to the community because, again, it's where you live, it's where you work, and there's no greater joy than you can have than to help someone, whether it's succeed in a business opportunity or just find a place to spend the night or some food or whatever the case might be. Mm-hmm. I was very blessed in 1986 to be chosen to be a member of the 1986 best class ever of Leadership Atlanta. That one year had a huge impact upon my life. One day we had lunch together at the St. Luke's Soup Kitchen and heard a speaker by the name of Bill Bowling. Bill changed my life. Looking into that man's eyes, I felt like I saw the eyes of God himself, and so much love and compassion. And those that do not know Bill Bowling or who he is, Google him, look him up. He was the founder of the Atlanta Community Food Bank and just recently retired. And Bill has had a huge impact upon my life and opened so many doors for me about how to be involved and how to really help. Bill says that he believes that everyone has a desire to help another. It's making it as easy as possible. And so if you create the opportunities, people will come and serve. I think Michelle Nunn and the original six or seven folks that started Hands On Atlanta, another great example. That's worldwide, and millions of lives have been affected because a bunch of, you know, six or seven young folks got together drinking wine in Decatur in somebody's apartment, mm-hmm. and the next thing you know, points of light, and it's all over the world.
That is fantastic.
So it's exciting.
Yeah, and it got to be exciting to hang out with President Carter as well. I mean, to know him personally and sit on that board of advisors, that speaks a lot to your reputation that he trusts you enough to be part of that.
Well, I had the privilege of introducing President Carter, who was at that time running for governor of Georgia in 1969, to my church group down in Columbus, Georgia.
So you and him go way back then.
Well, he doesn't remember that. I do. It was life-changing for me.
Of course.
Interestingly enough, he was speaking to us as he was running for governor as probably a favor for a friend or some of the adults in the congregation. What I do remember, I don't remember what he had to say, but what I remembered was it was maybe 65, 70 teenagers. He spoke to us as if we were the most important people in the world. Hmm. We couldn't vote. We didn't have $15 that we could donate to his governor's race. And yet he treated us with great respect. That is who I think he's been his entire life, his entire career. Whether you voted for him or liked his political persuasions in the mid-70s is one thing. I know very few people who would not say he's the greatest ex-president in the history of America. What he's done through the Carter Center, eliminating river blindness, guinea worm disease in Africa and South America, amazing work has been done by that man and his dear wife, Rosalind, and others at the Carter Center. And I think I write in my book that I think Jimmy Carter is one of the greatest networkers in history. He was an ex-president, but he also used his network. He used the people at Eli Lilly and DuPont, created his network to get mesh to sane the mm-hmm. rivers in Africa. So to me, that is networking for good, that has changed the world and really eradicated a disease, one of the first to be eradicated in hundreds and hundreds of years. So it is an honor to go to the board meetings once a quarter.
Right. And so here we are in 2016, and you're on these different boards, and you're starting a new business venture as a seasoned entrepreneur yourself and connecting socially and in your community. And again, if those in Atlanta do not know Ricky Steele, well, you have had your eyes closed, or you've been hiding under a rock, because he knows everyone in this town. So how has that helped you now that you're launching your latest venture, Steele Technology Partners?
Well, again, you know, life is interesting. There are a lot of twists and turns along the way. I've been in IT staffing about 10 years now for a couple of different companies. You know, I think that the definition of an entrepreneur is someone stupid enough to work 70 hours a week for themselves to keep from working 40 hours a week for somebody else.
Right.
And I made up with it bad. So probably around September, October, I started thinking about, am I too old? Is 63 and a half too old? And
because in your book, you talked about your last one being your last rodeo few years ago.
I did think my last one was going to be my last rodeo. I said, God willing, this will be my last rodeo.
Okay.
He wasn't. And so I got a new opportunity. What got me excited about this one was my son, Everett. Richard Everett III, University of Georgia graduate, officer, served in Iraq. I know mm-hmm. you're a veteran as well, Ryan. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he was coming out, transitioning out of a business, and the fact to be able to work with him as the chief operating officer of the company, and really the brains and the hard work. I'm kind of the, you know, 40,000 foot, open some doors, but he and a guy by the name of Britt Peoples, mm-hmm. who is our director of recruiting, are going to do the heavy lifting, and I'll hopefully, you know, help them along. I want to do this at least 4, 5, 7 years.
Okay.
And then they'll take over 100%. But But what it's allowed me to do is in a very short period of time, you know, we're a 2-week-old IT staffing firm. We already have relationships and MSAs in place with two Fortune 500 companies, one Fortune 100 company. We'll make our first placement perhaps today or tomorrow. There's a final lunch with a candidate at a great friend who's been a client of mine twice in the past. So I think we're maybe a step ahead of where most companies ever begin. We already have business. I went around and asked some dear friends if they would be willing to serve on our board of advisors. Anyone that I've shared this with has looked at me and said, are you kidding me? How in the world could you get Ann Kramer, a living legend and saint in her own right in this community, to join your board of advisors from IBM and now with Cox Curry?
Mm-hmm.
Jeff McConnell, who's a dear friend, who's been with a number of companies, American Express and others. Chris Kenyon, former CIO at Elevon, and now with Oracle, a sensational guy. James Dallas, who has a show also on Business Radio X, who was the CIO of Georgia Pacific. Becky Blaylock, another living legend who I've had the honor of interviewing her on Booth 61.
Mm-hmm.
Becky was a CIO of the Southern Company for many, many years. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I think that's it. If I've missed someone, gosh, I apologize. But again, to have 6 people of that magnitude serving on the board is just extraordinary. And I think it's not really, they don't sit on that many boards unless they're investors or what have you. But I think it's more of a testimony to the community involvement. And they know that for me, Steel Technology Partners is a very serious business. And we're going to be very good at what we do. But it's really a platform. It's an opportunity for me to be involved in the community. We've already joined the Chamber of Commerce at the highest level available, wrote a check for more money than I've ever wrote for joining an organization. But I believe Hala Modelmog is revolutionizing the Chamber of Commerce of Atlanta. Metro Chamber is what they call it now. She's got a fantastic team, and I want to be part of that. TechBridge, of course, yes. TechLynx. Nobody does more for the technology industry than TechLynx. Frank Bell and the Georgia CIO Leadership Association and Lisa LaRoque, who is executive director. I want to be around individuals that are making community change to make it better for all of us, that rising tide lifts all boats. And so to me, this is just a vehicle to stay engaged in the community because I want to be a part of not only what's happening, but seeing lives change.
Yeah, you weren't ready to go. You weren't ready to kick back yet and put your feet up on the easy chair on the beach just yet. So you wanted to do one more shot to give back and still kind of from that perspective of helping the community grow.
My dad worked until about an hour and a half before he left this earth. And I'm like Warren Zevon. I'll sleep when I'm dead.
Okay.
And, So I can't imagine. I don't golf. I don't tennis. I don't hunt. I love my wife. I love my children, my 2 grandchildren. My faith is very important to me, so I'm involved in things like the high-tech prayer ministry and other things. So that is where I get my great joy in life. If you're a golfer, tennis, or whatever the case might be, and that's not a bad thing. It's just
not
my
you.
Thing.
Right.
And so that's what I want to be doing until an hour before I transition to the Father's house.
They call you home, right?
I just wanted to go back to your book for a second.
Yes, ma'am.
In chapter 5, you talk about creating a presence, and I'm just going to read a little bit about what you said. Today, you can spread your message and influence across many platforms and reach millions of people. Social networking is traditional networking leveraged spectacularly. If you are going to be in the game of connecting with people, you must have a presence. Okay. Mm-hmm. Having said that, the very first time I met you, which was just a couple of weeks ago, you stood out. You have a presence about yourself. And I remembered you. I remembered your name. You introduced yourself. We shook hands. In today's world, and I see this with my 2 teenagers, being so into online and not having that one-on-one contact, that handshake that you talked about that was so important and that eye-to-eye contact. How do you create a presence today?
Well, first, Alex, thank you very much. That was very kind. That means a lot to me. Second, to answer your question, I think for everybody it's a little bit different. We are all unique and we all have different strengths and weaknesses. So the way I do things may not be the right way for someone else. But I think finding a place where you're comfortable. Dr. Jennifer Kahnwilder, who is a great Atlanta friend of mine, wrote a book about introverted, and the title escapes me right now, but it's the dealing with the introverted life and how to get out of the shell. And the name of the book will come to me in a half second. But anyway, I would recommend Dr. Kahnwilder's book to anybody that's a little bit apprehensive of getting out into the crowd and shaking hands with folks. So once you can break through that, then you find your niche. I go to events all the time. If I don't know a lot of the folks in the room, I am not the most aggressive. I'm not the kind of guy that just jumps into a room, starts shaking hands and slapping folks on the back if I don't know who they are. Many times I'm the wallflower. I will go into a room where there's not a lot of people that I know and kind of stand to the side and try to see what the room looks like, how it's moving, who the players seem to be, who people are congregating around. And then almost always, not always, but almost always, I'll see one person that I know, and I'll go over to that person and say, Bill or Mary or Susie or whoever, I don't know a lot of people here. It seems like you do. Could I hang around you? I'll get you some fruit. I'll get you a glass of wine. I'll shine your shoes later or wash your car if you like. But could I just hang around you and spend some time and maybe meet some of these folks that you know? And other people enjoy helping people just as much as I do and as much as y'all do. So most often they'll say yes, and I'll get a chance to kind of get into the conversation. And then you just listen. We have two ears and one mouth. We should use them proportionately. So I'm not there to share how great and wonderful and brilliant I think I might be, but to hear other people share how great and wonderful and brilliant or some ideas they may have. When you listen with an empathetic ear, then I think people gravitate towards you a bit because you can become a trusted advisor. So again, I worry about you go to a dinner, a lunch party, and you see two or three kids and young people in restaurants and they're texting. I think they're texting each other. They forgot how to communicate or how to pass the salt. So they're texting, please pass the salt. That worries me of what's going to happen in 10 or 15 years, but I can't solve all the problems in the world. Nobody's ever been able to do that, but I do speak to a lot of groups. I'm very fortunate. Kennesaw State University, Chris Hanks has come there from the Terry School of Business, and Chris is going to revolutionize Kennesaw State. He's going to make entrepreneurship such a priority, and I'm honored to have the opportunity to spend some time there. I've had the privilege of giving my Heart of Networking presentation at Georgia Tech, at the Terry College many times, at Emory, Georgia State, North Georgia College, and at Kennesaw State, where Dr. Tim Mescon first invited me to speak in 2006. So in each message, I talk to the young people about, I don't care how smart you are. I don't care how many degrees you receive, get your doctorate, post degrees, whatever the case might be. If you don't learn how to network, you don't learn how to connect with other individuals, you'll be the smartest person that's unsuccessful in your career. So hopefully be able to share that a few more times as long as, you know, God keeps me on this earth.
And how do you go about creating your presence online?
That's something that my son and I argue with from time to time. I'm a little bit out there. I share a lot, and I share a lot from the heart because my book is not called The Art of Networking. It's called The Heart of Networking, and my wife actually created the title. I believe it's about love. To me, it's all about love, and it's the love for your network, for their success, for them as individuals and people. And when you truly love someone, you're going to act differently towards them. It's not about your best interest, but about their best interest. And so I talk about my faith on Facebook, and I talk about my granddaughters, and I show a lot of pictures. A lot of people say, oh my gosh, I just love following you on Facebook. And I said, yeah, what did I say that was interesting? Oh, it's nothing you said. It was your granddaughter's smile or this, that, or the right. other. And so I try to be real in that sort of way. My son is a little, being, you know, half my age, is a little more pragmatic and does a lot more business-focused type discussion. And he's got a much larger following than I do. So it's to each his own. But me personally, Susan O'Dwyer, who's a dear friend, who's at Haber Fair, Gideon Wynn, we used to be at PwC together. And she told me that from time to time, people would ask her, said, is he like this all the time? I'm not sure that was a compliment. But she would say, yeah, what you see is what you get. That is who he is in the morning and at night and on the weekends. And again, I don't know whether that's a good or a bad thing, but it is the thing.
I think it's a good thing.
It is a good thing for sure. And it's a good thing to have Ricky Steele in the studio here today. We're going to be wrapping up the segment here. But before we do, I want to kind of dive into what we call the either or segment. These are quick one answer questions that you're going to give either or, and you tell us what you prefer. So first, dogs or cats?
Oh, gosh. Is nor a possibility?
Dogs or cats? That's the question.
Not a nor.
No.
Okay. We've had plenty of both. If I've got to go one way or another, I'm going to go with dogs.
Okay. Hamburgers or hot dogs?
Another one. I didn't get to be this size because I was particular about food.
Okay.
You know, I eat both on a regular basis, yep. But I do love a great hot dog.
Good, good. Boxers or briefs?
Oh, geez.
We're getting personal here, Alex.
Yeah.
Boxers.
Okay. Blues or R&B?
Now, that's a difficult one. I love some of the great blues artists. The greatest radio station and the greatest disc jockey that I know is a fellow named Youngblood on KISS 104.1.
FM. That's right.
Every Saturday morning at 7 a.m., he opens a show with Black Moses, Isaac Hayes singing, "I Just Don't Know What to Do with Myself." I'm there every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. I love the R&B world. I had the privilege of seeing James Brown in the Columbus Municipal Auditorium when I was about 16 or 17. I've had the privilege of seeing the Temptations, the Four Tops, Diana Ross. And this Thursday night, my oldest boy, Everett, and I will see Prince with nothing but a microphone and a piano. Not once, but twice. We've got tickets to the 7 o'clock and the 10 o'clock show.
Fantastic. So you're a music lover all around through and through.
I love music. From I've just had a privilege of meeting Ty Anderson, who was one of the founders of Third Day, mm-hmm. a Christian rock band that's just fantastic. But I've had a privilege of seeing Frank Sinatra and Elvis Presley in Auburn in 1974. Wow. Ike and Tina Turner in Athens in 73. Springsteen, the last tour, and probably six times previously. I do love music.
You should write a book just on your musical journeys and the people you've seen and the places you've been because of music. I think that's...
I'm just not sure the statute of limitations have has expired yeah, for right. some of those things I've seen.
Right, right. And one more, Laverne or Shirley?
Oh, gracious. I don't watch a lot of television. I know the show. Yeah. I think I like Squiggy the best.
Okay, yeah, that's it. We'll accept that for sure. Yeah. So good. That's a fun segment for sure. Helped us get to know our guest even further. And the last bit here, we're going to talk a little bit about the future for you, your legacy. You've mentioned a couple times your granddaughters. They are the greatest thing in the world to you these days and certainly bring you great blessings and joy. What do you want them to know about you and your legacy when they get to be old enough to understand more than just Papa right now? So yeah, your legacy. Talk about that.
I live each day as if it were the last because I don't know when this world is going to end for me. And so it's trying to have as much positive influence on the world as you possibly can. I hope my granddaughters, when they get older, will look back and know that I love them with all my heart and soul and that I love my family, my friends. My business has always been something that was a platform, not a destination or not the most important thing in my life, and that I try to keep my priorities straight. I think there's a lot of people that fall in love with themselves, and they say that the biggest problem with a self-made man is he's in love with his creator, and I'm in love with the creator, mm-hmm. not what I've done or succeeded or failed. I've had many failures along the way as well, but hopefully that I just try to treat people fairly. And worked hard. And I think hard work always creates a lot of luck. Mm-hmm. And that they saw me work hard at my business and at life and treated people fairly. And that would be a pretty good way to go out.
And it's just a good, honest testimony to the good work you've already done and being able to carry that through to your children and then your grandchildren and beyond. I know the city of Atlanta is proud to have you here. And one day they may erect a statue in your name. Where are they going to put this statue in Atlanta? Because you've been all over this town for so long.
Probably a phone booth in West End.
right.
That's where my first company was. We're right over by West End Mall when we had Sunbelt Limousine mm-hmm. Back in the late 70s, early 1980s. But yeah. No, that's never going to happen. To me, I think Ted Turner actually had it on his desk, and I've heard this many times, is there's no limit to what you can accomplish in life if you don't care who gets the credit. Mm. And so to me, what's important is what Everett and Britt are going to do. They're the ones that are going to make this come to successful. I may get out and do the tap dancing and the glad handing and trying to open up some doors along the way, but it's what the other folks do. Don Henley, one of my favorite musicians from the Eagles, has had a single, and it ended up with, "They don't make hearses with luggage racks." None of us are going to take any of it with us.
Right.
So how we're going to be judged as we leave is the contribution we made with people. You know, to me, folks that are all focused on what they've accomplished and what they have accumulated, the size of the crowd at the funeral is mostly determined by the weather, mm-hmm. because they invested in the wrong things. And even though I have a nice house, I drive a nice car, and I've been very blessed in many, many ways, to me, that's not what's really, you know, life's all about.
Right. It's about making memories along the way, and people are remembering you. And you may have influenced people that you don't even know as you just continue to do good work and be positive on a natural, regular rhythm. You never know who is listening or watching and perhaps adopting some of these same philosophies and incorporating them into their mission for life and such. So I just wish you much success, not only with Steel Technology Partners, but you as a human and as a father and a grandfather going forward. And Atlanta, again, is certainly proud to call you one of the true icons out there holding this great city together and taking it into the future on the horizon. Any thoughts about where you see Atlanta growing to and where it may be when your granddaughters get older?
Well, we got a big mayoral race coming up, and Kasim will be leaving the office, and he's done a lot of great things as well. I think we've had a legacy of great mayors. Certainly Shirley Franklin was one of the best we ever had. Andy Young, of course, an icon himself. Maynard Jackson. Atlanta's been very blessed with great leadership, and of course, the legacy of Dr. King and Roberto Consueta at Coca-Cola, and so many, Mr. Woodruff, of course, at Coca-Cola. Many, many great people, but where I see Atlanta in the future is I think that as Atlanta continues to expand and the suburbs of Atlanta is called Chattanooga and Asheville, we're going to have to do something with the infrastructure, with the inner city. We've got to do something with our bridges, our water, crime, perception, and certainly homelessness and hunger, all issues that are being looked at very deeply by the chamber and by other groups. So I think it's going to be about the heart issues are going to be the important things that are going to help us grow and be the city. I mean, we are the city of Dr. King. We are the city too busy to hate, as Ivan Allen said. So to me, that's the legacy I want to know in Atlanta for. The fact that we host the Final Four of the Super Bowl, that is sensational. The fact that we had the 100th anniversary of Coca-Cola here in 86 and the Olympics in 96, those are all sensational and great pride for someone who was born in Crawford Long Hospital. But I think how we treat one another and the people in our community is the way that's going to build our legacy that will withstand the test of time.
Amen. Certainly resonate with that. And before we leave, let's tell our listeners how they can connect with you or Steel Technology Partners or find your book, any one of those outlets.
Well, first, both to you, Ryan, and to you, Alex, thank you very much. It's been an honor to be with you all this morning. You all are just great people. And I think that the work that Stone and Lee are doing with Business Radio X, not just in Atlanta, but all across the country, is making a huge difference, allowing small businesses to tell their story. So I tip my hat to all of y'all. I am Ricky Steele. I can be found at ricky@rickysteele.net or ricky@steelejobs.com. It's Ricky Steele on Twitter. It's Ricky Steele on Facebook and LinkedIn. If you do ask to link or connect in some way or another, please mention you heard this radio show. I do not accept every request. I accept requests of people that I think I can be of benefit to or a company I'm interested in or have done business with before, but I'm just not going to accept random requests. Also, I would love for anyone to go to steeljobs, steeljobs.com. And if you know someone in the job market today, it is a great time. It is probably the greatest time in history to be unemployed if you're a technologist, because there are more people hiring right now than you can say grace over. So we would be honored to help you find the next position. Or if you know somebody looking, send them to steeljobs.com and we'll help them find a position. And certainly, if you know of anyone, any company looking for great IT talent, it would be a privilege to serve them. I have not made a cold call since 1978 or 79, and I don't want to start now. I only do business with friends and friends of friends. So if you are in the position of hiring IT talent, we would be honored to serve you. Again, getting back to what our foundational principles, we are passionate about the folks that we are able to serve, our clients, the candidates that we come in front of, our community at large, and then each other. And again, we think that's going to differentiate us and give us a great chance to being a success, not only in Atlanta, but across the country.
No doubt about it. We'll have those links posted up later on our website, AtlantaBusinessRadio.com, so you can connect with Ricky there. And that's Steele, S-T-E-L-E, just so you clarify that.
S-T-E-E, two E's
two
in the
E.
middle. S-T-E-E-L-E.
Sorry about that. I misspoke there. Ladies and gentlemen, S-T-E-E-L-E.
Yes, sir.
Ricky Steele. So he's helping others first. He's giving back along the way. He's connecting everyone and making sure that this world is going to be a better place, particularly Atlanta, for his children, grandchildren, and beyond. So thank you so much, Mr. Steele, for joining us. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. And thank you, Alex, for producing and another great show and jumping in with some great questions there. And so if you're interesting and your company is doing something out there that you want to be part of the show, pitch us your story at businessradiox.com. Thank you to Stone Payton and Lee Cantor. And on behalf of the entire Business Radio X Network, I'm Ryan Redhawk McPherson. We will see you on the radio.